This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Lots of Seahawk injury news. For sure now it looks like Rashad Penny's going to miss the game with a knee injury. There'll be no K.J. Wright, no D.J. Fluker. They're all going to miss the game. Doug Baldwin is going to be able to play. That's, of course, good news in that regard. It looks like, on the 49ers side, Jerquiski Tartt, safety, is going to miss the game. He's got some knee problems, and we'll see about Matt Breida, the running back. You know, he's 50-50 right now because of an ankle injury. It looks like Martavius Bryant gets suspended indefinitely for more violations of the substance abuse policy. He's the Oakland Raider wide receiver. Officially, Carson Wentz ruled out of the game with a broken back. He's got a fractured vertebrae, so he's not going to be able to play. So that looks like Nick Foles starts against the Rams. And of course, lots of other injury news we'll all keep you up to date on. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Curtis Rogers, who got the evening shift normally taken care of now until baseball season starts. And C-Rodge, let's start off a little bit with baseball, because kind of your reaction to some of the trades, and particularly now I know you've had spent a lot of time with Carlos Santana, who came here and was traded within about a week or so. Edwin Encarnacion, draft choice, 77th pick in the draft, and $11 million.
Yeah, well, good morning, John. We all got to know Carlos Santana very well in his tenure with the Mariners, 10 days he spent with the organization. But it's interesting to me what the Mariners are doing right now, in that they're looking for more payroll flexibility than they are young talent, which they've gotten a lot of young talent in these trades. Obviously, the trade with the Mets, giving up Diaz and Cano, getting back a Hall of Prospects, and then Justice Sheffield for James Paxton as well. But they were able to convert Carlos Santana's 2 years remaining left on his deal into 1 year left of Edwin Encarnacion. And an expiring deal like Encarnacion's becomes more and more valuable on the trade market, as guys, whether they stick with Encarnacion going into the regular season or not. I think the Mariners could very well get back more in return for him than they could for Santana. But then the question is, what will the Mariners do with this payroll flexibility? If they don't do anything, I think that makes the wedge between the fan base that is not for a rebuild, I think that drives it even bigger. But if they do use this payroll flexibility in the years down the road to improve the roster, I think you could very well say that this was worth it, but we're going to have to wait and see just where the Mariners go to in the coming weeks, and obviously in the coming years with all these young players that they're waiting on to develop. But I think payroll flexibility right now has become goal number one for the Mariners. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the remaining guys who are due a significant amount of money. Kyle Seager, he's one of those guys, but I don't think he gets moved, because if he does, he has a vesting option where the option that he currently has becomes fully guaranteed his final year. I believe it's like $15 or $16 million. I don't think any team wants to take on that kind of money for a guy who is clearly not his best. He hasn't been his best for a couple of seasons now. So it should be interesting to see what the Mariners continue to do. And obviously, we still got a long way to go before spring training. The winter meetings just wrapped, and some of the free agency dominoes haven't even fallen yet. The Mariners will very much be paying attention to that, because then they can take advantage of teams that have missed out on, say, Nelson Cruz, because then you could swing Edwin Encarnacion to a team that doesn't get a big bat like Cruz. It should be a very interesting next couple of months for the Mariners.
Are you liking these kind of shifts? I don't. Because, again, the idea of now waiting over two decades to get to the playoffs at a time now, which I think is one of the worst times to try to tear it down, because you've got 10 other teams in the same process trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, it definitely throws a wrench into the plans, because, like you said, there are so many teams that also have this kind of mindset. Especially in the American League, you've got, the Orioles, who just had one of the worst seasons of all time, the White Sox, the Royals, the Twins. They've kind of, gutted what they've had. You've got also in the AL West, Texas is trying to do the exact same thing. You've got a third to about half of the American League trying to do that. And then that doesn't even take into account the teams in the National League. It's not an advantageous time for the Mariners to do that, especially with so many teams, you know, trying to tear it down to the studs at the exact same time. There's a growing gap between the elite level teams in baseball and the bottom level teams. And there really is no mid-level for the Mariners to take advantage of. What technically they were kind of a mid-level team last year, 89 wins, you know, just a few games out of the wild card race. But do I like these moves? No, I don't like how they've packaged great prospects or great guys with trade value like Edwin Diaz in order to dump salary. I feel like they could have gotten more for Diaz simply by himself on the trade market. And then I don't like how they haven't moved Mitch Haniger. And Mitch Haniger is a guy that a lot of people in this front office love. His bat, obviously, and then just his mentality in the clubhouse. They say he's a role model for a lot of these young guys that they've acquired. But if you're truly trying to tear it down to the studs, try and get the most in return, and Mitch Haniger is the one guy left on your roster that can get you a serious haul, possibly even a Mitch Haniger type player in return. I think they could have done a lot better than what they've done, but you know, there's still a lot more time left in the off season.
Yeah, that's the thing that I can, because again, particularly being a numbers guy like I is, to play around, seem like that you're right. I mean, obviously it's trying to get more talent, but also the numbers, and it's like, hey, the numbers should be almost irrelevant. I mean, you're going to have, you know, $160 million payroll, and you want what flexibilities are going to be, because, you know, a lot of these prospects you're picking up aren't going to be there in the next couple of years. They're still going to be in the minors.
Exactly. Yeah, you've got Jared Kelenic coming over from the Mets, who's probably 2 to 3 years away. Justice Sheffield is obviously the most major league ready of the prospects they've received back, but who knows how he'll be in his first full season in the bigs. Justin Dunn, the Mets pitcher, the 2016 first-round pick, there have been a lot of question marks whether his future is in the rotation or in the bullpen. But, yeah, the Mariners right now, they're playing for 2020 and 2021. They're not playing for 2019. And that's who knows where that could, you know, force their hand next offseason. What if these prospects don't pan out? Are they're kind of left in a no man's land? And that's the thing about acquiring prospects. It's such a crapshoot. You know, there's no guarantee that any of these guys will pan out the way that Edwin Diaz did for you. So, you know, there's a lot of question marks. I'm eager to learn some of these answers, but remains to be seen.
Yeah, no question. So stay tuned. More trades are going to be coming out there. On the Seahawks side, a game tomorrow, which you can't really say it's a big game. It's an important game because you win it, you're in the playoffs. But you know, and you're all set, and you're likely going to lock up the number 5 seed, and you do have the flexibility of resting some players. How do you look at the game?
I look at it like this. Just listening to Richard Sherman this weekend, or his press conference, I believe it was, Wednesday or Thursday, he was already talking about the 49ers, you know, vacation plans. And when you have players like that talking about the offseason 3 weeks out from the offseason, it shows that there's not a level of focus out there. And you know, the Seahawks, they know what's at stake tomorrow. A playoff berth is on the line. And over the last 4 weeks, I don't know if we've seen a Seahawks team as focused as they are right now in a long time. The last time I can remember a Seahawks team being this focused, I would say it was the end of 2015, when they got off to a similar slow start, 4-5 after 9 weeks, but then rattled off a bunch in a row, finished the regular season 10-6. I think the Seahawks right now are very close to pulling off that same kind of feat. And Pete Carroll has done an incredible job over the years of keeping his team focused and remembering what's at stake. And I see the Seahawks winning. I don't think it's going to be 43-16 the way it was a couple weeks ago, but I do think the Seahawks win. I would say I'm going to give them a 2-touchdown victory.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, how do you look at the way this season has gone? I mean, I feel good in the standpoint. I've been able to nail it because I said and never varied from it. They're going to win 9 games. And if they get a break, which would be the Carolina game, they get 10. And that's kind of where they're at.
Yeah. I was under the assumption at the beginning of the season that they were going to be about an 8-8 team. And then after the 0-2 start, I didn't see them even pulling out 8-8. But credit to Pete Carroll, credit to John Schneider, credit to Ken Norton Jr. and Mike Solari and Brian Schottenheimer for getting these guys right back on track. They have been, you know, one of the best teams in the NFL over the last 11 weeks, 8-3 since that 0-2 start. I wonder how much has this 2018 season added on to Pete Carroll's career, because at the end of 2017, he kind of looked a little bogged down, and, you know, in his voice, it wasn't as energetic as it is right now. And I think this group of guys, this 2018 team, has definitely given new life to the Seahawks and their run. And I think given new life to Pete Carroll. And I think he's, I think he's very ready for the next couple of years here in Seattle.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, I think he's good, due for an extension. And, because, again, you look at the team and, where there's a comparison, I think that with that 0-2 start, you take a look at the Chargers. Last year, they got off to an 0-4 start. They win 9 out of their last 12. Now they're sitting there, perched atop, almost within a tiebreaker of getting the AFC West. And so, I think that, I'm not saying Super Bowl next year, but I think that they can go deeper into the playoffs and they'll go this year, and then maybe 2020 you start thinking Super Bowl.
Yeah, and then this week we also saw that there's going to be a significant increase to the NFL salary cap next year, and the Seahawks already were among the teams with the most cap space. John, my question to you is, how active do you think the Seahawks will be in free agency next year?
I don't think very active at all. I think that
Really?
Well, because they need to continue to get draft choices. And, of course, they were overly active this year where they cost themselves 3 fourth-round picks. And this is going to be a very bad free agent class, very bad. And the reason I say that is that one of the things I keep track of is, okay, how many guys from the 215? That's going to be the 215 is the next free agent class, right? And there's only like about on the current rosters about 48 guys that are going to be available. And because, again, they've either been injured, cut, wiped out. So that tells me the 215 draft class was not very good. And you saw the 213 draft class. That wasn't very good. Seattle had some hits and misses on that. So I think that it's more advisable to try to get some draft choices and build that way. I mean, you notice, the success of this team is not necessarily the free agents, the big free agents. Yeah, they hit on DJ Fluker, J.R. Sweezy, Barkevious Mingo. But, no, I think that if it's going to be, low-cost shopping, because the high ends aren't going to be there.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and there's definitely no shame in building through the draft. How do you see them using that amount of cap space that they have? Is an extension for Russell Wilson probably priority number one for the
No,
Seahawks?
I think that the extension for Frank Clark is priority number one, but it looks like, he'll get the franchise tag, and then you have to start making strategic decisions. Do you want J.R. Sweezy? Do you want DJ Fluker or both? Do you want Justin Coleman? Do you want to do something with K.J. Wright? So those, I think, are to be the priority. With Michael Kendricks, is he going to be eligible to play? Do you get him back?
Yeah, and I mean, Kendricks, in the short time that he's played this season, he's been valuable out on the field. And then, you've also got other question marks. Who do you keep? Guys like Doug Baldwin, who I believe if he gets cut, they save $6 million. So that would be an interesting decision.
I think you keep him. I know that
plays out.
Yeah, I think you keep him because, again, the difference when he's not on the field is significant. And I know, as Evie even saying, he's 30 and heading down the downside, but he's still a valuable guy. And again, it's like, you want to try to not lose talent. You want to keep talent, and you want to add to the talent.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up, because I think it was Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. He tweeted out a chart of Russell Wilson's numbers with Doug Baldwin on the field as opposed to without him on the field. And his numbers are dramatically better with Baldwin in the lineup and on the field, and whether it's getting the ball to Baldwin or him creating space for other guys to work, he still has tremendous value to the Seahawks offense.
Agreed. Hey, C-Raj, thank you so much, and another interesting weekend ahead.
For sure. Thank you so much, John. Have a great one.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hey, Tara.
Hi, Mr. Clayton. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Family in town and my brother's back in town, so it can't get much better than that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I was reading an article about how the secondary is young, and one of the leaders stepping up is Bradley McDougal. What are some of his influences? Like, what do you see him doing on and off the field that make him, that help out this, like, people?
Yeah,
like,
he is a very good communicator, and one of the things he does, whether it's by voice or pointing, he makes sure that he gets the guys in the right spots in the secondary. He learned a lot last year from Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor taught him, it's like, listen, you've got to assume more leadership. You've got to try to do that, make it easier for the young guys, you know, keep the control. Because, again, I mean, particularly when you have all these running plays, it can be so confusing, and you have pass plays and motion to be confusing. You got to make sure that they settle down. So he does a good job of that. He's a very good tackler. He's great in coverage. I mean, if you notice, George Kittle only had two catches in the first half of the game 2 weeks ago. I mean, he ended up getting six, but that was a garbage time type stuff. So he's very good. He's a Pro Bowl caliber player. Unfortunately, probably not getting any chance to go to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, and also he made a big play on the fourth and one against the Vikings last week, too. Mm-hmm. He was someone that I forgot to mention a couple weeks ago when I called in about the Pro Bowl. I kind of regret not mentioning because he should get the number of votes, and hopefully the players notice that.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's played at a very high level. I know Pro Football Focus has given him nothing but very good grades, and deservedly so, because he's been that good. So, you know, good job by him. And overall, I mean, you know, what a great signing, because they got him last year. He did well, particularly filling in, and now he's done even better filling in as a starter.
What kind of matchup do you see us going against the Chiefs, like the more high-powered offenses?
Well, I mean, pretty much the same thing. I think they'll stay, you know, stay in their cover one, cover three type of area. They'll try to, I don't know, they'll try to be physical with Tyreek Hill, and then they got to watch. I mean, again, this is two tough weeks for Bradley McDougal, because one, he'll get, George Kittle in this game tomorrow, and then next week Travis Kelce is also one of the best. So they are getting two really good tight ends back to back. But, you know, the big thing is, you know, don't you got to watch making the mistakes, because they'll make you make mistakes with the play calling that they have. And so that's going to be their big challenge.
I think he'll do great. He's lived up to the challenge every time he's come to it. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jim in Gig Harbor. Hey, Jim.
Good morning, John. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. First-time caller. I've been listening to you for about 3 years.
Oh, well, thank you.
And real quick, my mail's real slow, too. But
yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's like almost next-day mail, unfortunately. We never usually get it. We never before 7:30 in the evening anymore.
Yeah, that can drive you nuts. I just want to mention something. I have a very good friend that is a Mariners fan, and I said to him the other day, I said, "What do you think about all these trades?" He was not happy. He said, "I've been waiting for a team for 20 years, and now they're going to rebuild. I don't have another 20 years." Mm-hmm. So he's not happy.
I can understand it. I mean, because the problem is, it's like, okay, you know, you're not going to be the top team, and you're kind of stuck in the middle, but there's only like about seven teams, now six, that are playoff, you know, ready, right? Seattle was one of them. And so, Tampa Bay stepped ahead of them. Oakland stepped ahead of them. But, you know, if any of those teams come back, I mean, you still can be in the playoff hunt. But, you know, now to do this, I mean, it sets everything back 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, he was very upset, and so So I just wanted to mention that. But anyways, I enjoy your show. You do a really great job.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, big day today. The Jets play at 1:30.
Dr. John, how you doing?
Doing well.
I had to get my call in because once we're done, I got to get my pregame Prozac in, so I got enough time for it to start to kick in.
Right.
By the middle of the first quarter when everything starts to go awry, and I'll be all set for this afternoon.
You got to get the preparation because you got to make sure that Prozac, because if you're a Jet fan, you need the meds.
You betcha. We all got to tailgate as we need, and that's how the Jet fans need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what'd you make of last week's thrilling victory?
Wow, what a big one, huh? I mean, they just took care of those Buffalo Bills. It's pretty ugly, isn't it?
I tell you, they can't even tank right.
Mm-hmm.
They were awful the first half. My God, it was like they weren't even prepared to play.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, and I got to admit that, quite honestly, I was really hoping they weren't going to put that ball in on fourth and, what, a foot.
Right.
To end the game. I was really hoping that, because I think the point had been made. Darnold had brought him back. But, so I was hoping just for, purposes of the draft and everything else that they weren't going to punch that one in. But, they did. And I will say that, we are in a little bit different shape than we were last year. I mean, it's clear. We've got our franchise quarterback. I mean, we talked about it last week. And Darnold's the future, and they've got to build around Darnold. And I think the thing that was important last week, if you want to put a good spin on it, that I think that it's going to give the team a little bit of confidence, and more importantly, confidence in Darnold. And I think it may very well give Darnold some confidence. And I think that's the important thing for the next couple of games, because I think they're going to be hard-pressed to pull any of these off, against Texans, Green Bay, and I think the Patriots are still going to have something to play for that last week. So,
mm-hmm.
And besides, I can't see Belichick tanking against the Jets.
No, not at all.
That's just not in his DNA. But, so I think as far as the positive spin goes, I think, at least there was something to like about Darnold's effort last week.
Agreed. Yeah, I like Darnold. I know that everybody's on the Baker Mayfield bandwagon, but I still think Darnold was the better choice.
No, I fully agree, John. Don't forget, Baker Mayfield's, what, 28, 29, 35? How old is he? Where Darnold just turned 21 in June.
Right, right.
Darnold can't even grow a mustache yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He still uses a cat to shave. So there's a huge difference there. I mean, for the most part, outside of reading defenses and learning the NFL, Baker Mayfield's a finished product.
Yeah.
Darnold is not even close to reaching his full potential at this point. So I couldn't agree more. This offseason, I think, project one is to put more talent around him.
Yeah. And what kind of direction do you think coaching-wise they're going to go?
They're going to have to go offensive, John. I mean, come on, it's been, 15 years when we've been mulling around with defensive head coaches? I think Bruce Coslett was the last offensive-minded coach that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've gone from Pete Carroll to Herm Edwards and Mancini and, Ryan and now Bowles. I mean, it's just, been 15 years, 17
right.
years? Enough. It doesn't work. And your future is not Khalil Mack. Your future is not as good as he is Jamal Adams. Your future is Sam Darnold. You've got to nurture him any and every way you can. And, Rex Ryan's not going to do it. Todd Bowles is not going to do it. Herm Edwards is not going to do it. Mike Zimmer is not going to do it. You've got to get an offensive guy in there. The question is, where's it going to come from?
Exactly.
Do you dip down into the college ranks, perhaps? And try
yeah,
to
but honestly,
the
don't you, now, would you? You would agree with this. If you don't do it by next week, you're not going to get any college coaches because they're going to be, this is the next week is when recruiting starts. And you're not going to risk. I mean, you know, to get a college coach, you have to promise him the job, almost offer it to him without, it's not like a normal hire because there's so much on the line if they don't take it.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. And then don't forget, I mean, they still got an even bigger decision to make as to what they're going to do with Maccagnan.
Right.
Because, you know, enough already. We've had two arranged marriages between Ryan and Izvick and now Bowles and Maccagnan, and these guys just have not been on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Maccagnan is not drafting to fill whatever the hell Bowles is thinking he's going to do with offense, which changes year to year. But part of their problem is their talent is not matching their schemes. You know, and now it's just showing on defense as well. Well, enough already.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure out, is Maccagnan in or is Maccagnan out? And if Maccagnan's in, he's got to play a major role in the selection.
Right. He's got to get the guy that he wants and he needs. So that would be, I agree, that's a very important part of all this.
So, you know, they've got to make that. If they haven't made that decision, that thing's got to be made pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, if they are going to dip their toe into the college water, I mean, here, that's a good point you raised. I mean, that's an accelerated timetable there. Not just because of the coaches' situations, but also because of the competition of other teams, you know, that are going to be looking for new coaches as well.
Right.
So what would you do if you were the Jets?
I think I'd still stand by Maccagnan, and then I don't know. I mean, you know, you certainly wouldn't take Joshy Boy McDaniels. I mean, and so then do you start to go for, I mean, because again, the offensive selections, I mean, you know, John DeFilippo looked like he was going to get a job, but now do you hire him after he was fired as offensive coordinator and maybe proving maybe he wasn't even ready for the coordinator job? So he's now kind of out of the mix.
Yeah, that may have been a good whiff for the Jets on that one. They may have dodged a bullet there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but if you think about it, I mean, as far as an offensive-minded coach, in the NFL ranks, I mean, McCarthy kind of fits that mold.
Right.
But other than that, and I can't imagine why in his right mind he'd want to come to New York, vis-a-vis even Cleveland or another gig. You know, who else really is out there from an offensive skew to in the NFL that fills that bill?
Mm-hmm. I struggle to find the answer to that one.
Yeah, so I think you got to kind of think about dipping into the college ranks.
Yeah. But again, if you don't do it in the next week and they're not going to do it in the next week, it's not happening.
Well, it's going to be tough to make it happen, yeah.
Just doesn't go that way.
That's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about that one. It's going to be hard. And the Jets don't tend to move quickly either. So,
no, they do not.
It's a concern. But, you know, the other thing is it's going to be interesting how the rest of the season plays out because that was the other kick in the pants. I mean, they'd be vying for that number one pick had they lost last week. And they still may get a top three pick. You know, Oakland may very well knock off one of these teams the rest of the season.
Right.
But, you know, it really would have been nice if they were talking to them because, you know, I can't see them keeping the pick. But, boy, they really need to, you know, gather more draft picks and fill the coffers there. So, you know, hopefully it'll still play out. And hopefully a couple of these quarterbacks will come out. And one of these quarterback needy teams will pay a fortune to move up.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I mean, it's a defensive draft, and you know, there's a couple of good pass rushers that they certainly could use, but I think they really need to try to, you know, jump down, and they need a second-round pick.
Yeah.
You know, if nothing more, they've got to find a way to get a second-round pick, and I don't think they've got the talent to trade for one. So, I can't see them moving any of their high, you know, their high-rated, you know, the couple high-rated players that they have. I mean, I don't think they're going to trade Leo. I think he'd be the only one that they may consider trading.
Right.
So they really can't move anybody for a pick. So I think they're, you know, hopefully they'll get a top three pick and it'll work out. But man, it's an important offseason, that's for sure.
No question. Hey, Jet, good luck on the day and get that Prozac. It's getting close.
I'm heading to that medicine cabinet right now, John. Thanks.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Sam. Hey, Sam.
Hey, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I just want to talk to you briefly about the NHL, being as I believe you are also a big NHL fan. We've talked a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I just got back from Las Vegas, I was down there on business, and I happened to take in a Vegas Golden Knights Dallas Stars game.
Nice.
Have you been able to get to T-Mobile Arena or see an NHL game down there or
no,
anywhere?
No, I haven't been to Vegas in many, many years.
Oh, well, you need to make a point, your next opportunity anyway, to get in to see a Vegas Golden Knights game at T-Mobile, because as I was sitting there watching 25,000 people, and on just a regular season game against a team, the Dallas Stars, the place was jammed. The hockey culture there, it just made me overwhelmingly even more excited about what's coming to Seattle. It's so hard to explain to people around here the hockey culture and the excitement that the game has. And I wanted to get your thoughts about what you think that effect will be in Seattle, as I know you have. We're a big Penguins fan as well.
Right. Again, that's what it's great is that, you know, a live event like hockey, it doesn't translate as well on TV. You know, they don't have the camera angles and things of that nature. But again, the excitement, the hitting, you know, all the good things. I mean, it's great. It's a great sport. It's a much better sport to attend than to watch on TV. And I think that's one of the fun parts about it. And then you learn the game. It's not that hard of a game to learn, but it's good. And I think it's going to, I mean, you saw how quickly the tickets sold. And so I think that's encouraging. And I think the interest is going to be there.
Yeah, while I agree with you that it's better to see it in person, I've splurged a couple of years now in a row, and I've got the NHL Center Ice package, and mm-hmm. you know, I probably watch 5 games a week, mostly because I'm a Penguins fan, and I otherwise wouldn't get to see them.
Right.
Once you start to get to understand the game, even watching it on TV, I find it to be incredibly entertaining. And I really think that it'll pick up here a lot. Now, the other question I have for you is a little offbeat. I am going to Pittsburgh in March, of all things, for my 60th birthday, and my wife bought me tickets to see the Penguins and Flyers mm-hmm. in Pittsburgh.
Nice.
And how much better does it get than that, right?
That's pretty good.
And we will also have a couple days there where we really don't have anything to do. I've only been to Pittsburgh one other time in my life. Do you have any suggestions of things to do in Pittsburgh in March?
Well, let's see, because it's, you know, the weather gets a little bit better in March, and so wouldn't be bad to take one of the boats. Not rent a boat, but they'll take a little boat ride because they have those right there. I'd say particularly staying downtown. You go over to some nice little shopping areas to go to. I think you got to go to Heinz place because again, that they have some good shows downtown. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to do in Pittsburgh. I mean, because it's kind of revitalized. But I think the key, where you're going to stay?
Yeah, we're going to be staying at the William Penn.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, it's like 2 blocks from the PPG Paints Arena.
Right, agreed. So yeah, because that's a nice place to stay. You just walk right up the street. There's plenty of stuff because it's a small downtown, and so there's plenty of places to go. So I think that you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I appreciate your advice. I know you're an old Pittsburgh guy. So all right, well, thanks very much, John. I really respect your work. I respect your work ethic and your knowledge.
Appreciate that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Cindy in Lakewood. Hey, Cindy.
Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I have a question. Pete always throws in a razzle-dazzle play on really poignant games. And like at the Monday night game, he put George Hant and threw to him.
Mm-hmm.
Would he ever consider, or would Schottenheimer ever consider using George Hant as a blocking fullback?
I don't think he'd be opposed to it, no. I think that could be a possibility.
Would that be like something that they would throw in during like a playoff or do you expect them to throw any razzle dazzle plays tomorrow?
I think they're going to be pretty basic. You're on the road. You don't want to try to, they'll maybe make a couple of little trick plays, but again, I think it's still going to be more jet sweeps and all that. Cause I think the idea is, don't try to trick teams too much, just outperform them. and they're basic. I mean, remember, this is still the first year of this offensive turnaround, and so don't try to get too cute. And you want to, in particular, you're on the road. If you make a bad mistake, that could come back to haunt you. So I would have to think that if you really do want that big body out there, because remember, I mean, they're trying to do some not necessarily tricky stuff, but big physical stuff. And I think particularly knowing that you've got a lot of young players on the defense that you're going against, that, don't try to overcoach it.
Yeah. One more question real quick. So say if we win tomorrow, mm-hmm. and then we go up against Kansas City, would there be any chance to see the backup quarterback just to rest Russell any?
I tend to doubt it. I think they'll try to just continue to play and not. I don't think they would do that. I think that their idea is to go ahead and just play some football. But of course, I think if they have a big lead, let's say that they have the same lead as they had in this game, it's like if it's 27-0, then I would have to think maybe in the third quarter, fourth quarter, they were considering putting Brett Huntley in. So I think that you want to maintain this, and I don't if you're going to rest anybody, you're going to be resting him in the last game, Arizona.
Okay, thank you, Professor.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I am pretty amazed by this Seahawks team this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, they win in different styles.
They
like
do.
Last week, the defense. And 2 weeks ago, the offense. It seems to me they just went in different fashion, different ways.
And that's, I think it shows their resilience, because now you can see that what they do and the personality that they have on offense, now teams have to make an adjustment. They have to make a decision. Do you stop the run? Do you stop the pass? And so we've seen that now going back and forth. And I think that you can see that, defensively, that, they cleaned some things up and didn't make the mistakes that they did in, a couple of the games. And so that's encouraging.
Yeah, it's just that sometimes there's some flaws out there, like Russell Wilson throwing that boneheaded interception the other day.
Bad.
But other than that, it's been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it just shows. I mean, it's a pretty good football team.
Yeah, and there's no such thing as a flawless team in the NFL,
no,
I don't think. Because the Rams are not flawless. So is the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
So is the Bears.
No, in fact, I mean, this is a dangerous team if you have to play them in the playoffs, I would think. Very dangerous.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton, and you too, Mrs. Clayton. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
So Forbes magazine, Mr. Clayton, came out here recently talking about the most valuable college football programs based on figures from 2014 to 2016.
So this is another good Alabama story then, right?
No. Actually, it's a great Notre Dame story for Independence.
Uh-huh.
But the top team, as it turns out, really, the top 10, Texas A&M, Texas, Michigan, Alabama 4, Ohio State 5, Oklahoma 6, and Notre Dame 7
mm-hmm.
overall. Now, more importantly, though, you look at what the Notre Dame numbers were, and they basically say Notre Dame gets $15 million a year for their TV. They say they're ranked fifth annually for profits, and weren't able to include the lottery donations and stuff that they get. Also that they made a profit of 70. Mr. Clayton,
mm-hmm.
Texas A&M had a little bit over $100 million at number one.
Okay.
Now, the other thing on the TV side, Notre Dame-Michigan game, 7 million people watched that game. That was the number one game of the week. Regularly, Irish do 2,261,000 plus on every game,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of they were closer towards 3 million during the Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Pitt, and USC games, Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
Now, why would anybody want to join a conference? Huskies were ranked 20th in this Forbes magazine thing. Why in the world would anybody want to go into a conference when you can make all the money in the world and keep it.
Well, because you want to win a championship game, and you have a better chance to win a championship in the conference.
They're going to do that this year, aren't they, Mr. Clayton?
What's that?
Yes,
yeah, they're there to be able to lose, sure. I think they have a good chance.
Well, let's just say they're one out of four, Mr. Clayton, and
right.
those are fabulous odds. I'll take that anytime. I don't see the Huskies there for the battle, Mr. Clayton.
They're in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, second fiddle against Ohio State, Mr. Clayton.
No.
There's nothing better than an Irish Clemson game and then the winner of that playing for the national championship.
Yep, and so
I'll tell you, that
Clemson-Alabama game is going to be fantastic.
Oh, Alabama-Oklahoma, yeah, and I hope Oklahoma pulls the upset and the Irish beat Clemson. What a playoff championship game that'll be, Mr.
Well,
Clayton.
Stay tuned, but of course, I mean, still got to get in the conference. Hey, Irish, got to run.
Mr. Clayton, happy
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll catch up with Jim Moore next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.